A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello and welcome to Forever 35, a podcast about the things we do to take care of ourselves. I am Kate Spencer.
I am Dori Shafrir.
And we are not experts.
But we are two friends who love to talk about serums.
And here we are, together at last. Kate and Dori. Dori and Kate.
Dor Kate?
Oh, God.
Dori?
Kador? How come we have never discussed what our couple name would be?
Carrie?
Corey?
Corey.
It would be Corey, K-O-R-E-E.
Oh.
Or Kari.
Kari, yeah. Or Katri.
No. I kind of like Corey.
Corey, yeah.
It's no Brangelina or Bennifer. Those were the days, huh?
Oh,
mid-aughts,
yeah.
With those names. That doesn't really happen much anymore.
That's true.
The combining of celebrity couple names.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, I shed a tear for a time gone by.
Indeed.
Dori, how are you?
You know, I am doing pretty well. I believe I am in my third trimester.
Whoa, you've crossed that threshold.
I have crossed the third trimester threshold in the blink of an eye. I mean, not really, but...
It is going by fast.
It is suddenly going by fast.
Yeah, it is a little like, oh boy.
Yeah, yeah. And now I like fully look pregnant.
I will say this is true. Someone who sees you multiple times a week, all of a sudden, like last week, it was like, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. She's got a human in there.
You've got like just, you know, this jumpsuit that you're wearing, let's say, which was once just very flowy on you. Now it's tightening up on that belly.
But otherwise, I'm doing well. I've been cooking.
You've been truly living your best life.
I really feel like I'm living my best life.
You made this crockpot honey chicken.
Yes.
Which we will... Share the rest. Well, we share. It's not my recipe, but do you have it to share?
Yeah, I do have it to share. I will share it with our listeners.
It looks delicious.
It does. It was delicious. And then I was like, you know what? What am I going to do with this shredded chicken? I know. I'll make rice bowls.
Mm.
So I made some jasmine rice. And I got to say, the rice turned out perfectly.
Sticky, like a sticky jasmine rice?
Just a teensy bit sticky. Not too sticky.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Not too sticky.
I'm getting side-eyed.
And then I just sauteed some broccoli, peppers, and edamame, shelled edamame, with some garlic and ginger and just a touch of soy sauce. And then I just threw everything together. I have leftovers for days. It's really great. So I'm feeling good. And, you know, we're really entering the nesting phase. We finally got rid of the couch that was in the living room so we could move everything else around.
Your home is shifting.
My home is shifting, indeed.
Making room for the baby is happening.
It is fully happening. It's starting to feel like, okay, I think we might be able to actually make things work. We still have a lot to get rid of, but the process has been set in motion. And it feels like it had been feeling completely insurmountable. And now it's feeling like, okay, this is going to be a lot of work, but we're doing it. I also condoed my books.
Yeah, I loved the way you did it. Can you want to share for local listeners, LA listeners?
Yes. I found this organization called Rebook It, which is affiliated with the Last Bookstore in LA.
Which is the best bookstore. It's an amazing bookstore
in downtown LA. And their goal is to, I'm quoting from the website, to provide low-cost books and raise funds for local libraries, charities, hospitals, and schools. And they do that. I think they donate some of the books directly to these places, and then they also sell some of them at the Last Bookstore and use those funds to give to these organizations. So I'm feeling good about that. They emailed me the other day to say that I would be contacted by the person who was going to be picking them up. I have yet to be contacted, but I'm confident that it will happen. There's also some like controversy on Twitter about getting rid of books. Like someone tweeted, this tweet went viral, and someone had tweeted like, don't listen to Marie Kondo about books, like have as many books as you want. And then there were some people who were like, hey, I live in a really small apartment and I'd love to be able to have enough room to have as many books as I want, but like, that's just not possible for me. And like some people were like, if I want to get rid of my books, I'll get rid of my books. And, you know, I think that the nice thing about Marie Kondo is like, it's not about, the purge is not the primary emphasis. It's more about thinking about what you're keeping.
Interesting.
You know?
So it's not about the what you're letting go so much as what stays behind.
Yes. It's making the conscious choice to keep everything that you've decided to keep. So I went through all of my books. I went shelf by shelf. And
that's a lot of work.
Yeah.
Did you hold each book in your hands and like pause with it?
I didn't take too long, but you know, there were some that were tough choices, yeah. But there were also ones that I had never read and that I had kept for years being like, I'll read this someday. Uh-huh. And I was finally like, I'm never going to read this book. Let's be real here. So that felt good to get rid of.
Also, you're passing it out into the world to somebody who might read. Like, you know what I mean?
Totally.
Someone's going to pick it up.
Totally. So I'm feeling good about that. And I consolidated. I had two kind of small bookshelves in my office, and those are now clear. And all the books are now on the bookshelves in the living room. So that feels good, too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I'm feeling good about that. And also, related to books.
Yes.
I said I was mispronouncing his name last week or 2 weeks ago, whenever this was, but I completely mispronounced Michael Ondaatje's name.
Okay.
That is how you say it. The author of Warlight. Also, he is Sri Lankan, not African.
Yes,
I said he was from South Africa. He is Sri Lankan. I regret the error.
Well, I appreciate you clarifying that.
Well, thank you. How are you doing and what have you been up to?
Well, you know, basically two things, trying to solve my back pain and devouring the book series that I now talk about on every episode of this podcast because it's taken over my life. Mm-hmm. And all I do is walk around either listening to the book or reading the book. Mm. It's really all I'm up to right now.
Okay.
In addition to like working and parenting and like, you know, living
all the
my
million
life.
Other things that you do.
All the other things I do. But yeah. In the quiet, like I, you know, there are TV series I want to watch. Not happening. I did spend a day at our favorite local spot.
When did you go?
Sunday.
Oh.
This weekend.
Lovely.
I was really kind of struggling to make not even just time for myself to like go relax,
yeah.
But I wanted to write. And it is very hard for me to write when my family is around me. My husband is able, who is also a writer, is able to sit at our dining room table while our kids are like prancing in circles and like do his work and work on things. And I cannot.
Wow. He can really like shut everything else out.
He can do that. He could do that before we had kids. It's not, he is able to just have a laser beam focus, whereas I am distracted by social media, by our family, by TV. Everything is a distraction for me. So I actually went to a Korean spa that I love here in Los Angeles. I did the day pass and I just, you know, for like $20 or whatever it is, I soaked and saunaed and I took a nap, which is my favorite activity. And then I just worked. I just needed to like get out of the house. I didn't want to go to a coffee shop. I wanted to be somewhere I could sit for 7 hours.
I love this so much.
There are other people. The first time I went there, I did not realize it was a place I could go with my computer. There's a little cafe. Mm-hmm. And so I went and sat in there and wrote for a couple hours. But it really is a place where like you can go do anything. You can journal, you can work.
Yeah. And I don't think they have Wi-Fi.
They do in the cafe.
Oh, they do. Okay.
But I didn't feel like I needed to get on it. And the nice thing was for me, it was not a place where I felt like I had to get out. You know that the feeling of a coffee shop where you're like, oh gosh, they can see I finished my coffee.
Right.
I got to order something new. Totally. Or like you get the to-go cup so it looks like yes. You're still drinking it. I mean, the other place I go when I need to get work done is the library.
Yeah.
I use our local public libraries all the time. But I also wanted to soak in a hot bath for my back because I'm dealing with back pain. But I will tell you, I've kind of transferred my desire to get jacked onto my desire to solve my back pain. And I'm doing all these things and it feels better. And it feels like it's very satisfying to like try to care for myself and see progress.
Yeah.
I'm working on it.
I'm so glad to hear that.
Every night I get into bed with my heating pad for a couple minutes. Mm. I read the aforementioned Throne of Glass book series for a while. Mm. And I just, you know, I'm working on it. It's been interesting. It's slowed me down. I've changed kind of my fitness regimen. And I am really just trying to focus on healing my bod.
Yeah.
So.
Heal your bod in 2019.
Heal your bod.
Heal your bod.
Heal your bod is maybe a more positive goal than like tone your bod.
Mm.
Heal your bod. I mean, what does the healing mean anyway to any of us, right? Who knows?
It means whatever you want it to mean, Kate. Well,
for me, it means I would really like to not have pain in my lower left back / hip.
Yeah.
Anyway.
After one of my, I think it was one of my egg retrievals, and I was like in a lot of pain, Matt got me a heated throw.
Oh, tell me about that. Do you still own it?
Extremely cozy. I do. I could unearth it for you. Would you like to borrow it?
I'm curious. I don't need you to dig around for it, but I'd be curious. A heated blanket, essentially.
Yeah, but it's not as big as a blanket.
So you just like kind of wrap it around your feet?
It was great for me to like lie on the couch and just kind of cozy up with a nice heated throw.
I think you got to save it for yourself and bust it out this winter.
Of course, my dog was like, oh, that looks nice.
Well, I have like tried to get my dog onto the heating pad because I'm like, you are going to freak out once you realize there's like a heated bed in this area that was like your body size. But she has yet to have the courage to climb on.
Well, her loss.
Right?
Yeah.
Ding dong. Well, anyway, Dory.
Yes.
Let's take a quick break.
Okay.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I think it's safe to say that we have suffered through bras. We've been uncomfortable in them. We've devoted whole episodes to finding good ones. But I'm here to say enough is enough. Enough. Enough.
I mean, drawn the line. Dory, have I ever told you what I did in college when I needed a bra to wear with a fancy dress?
What?
I cut the top of pantyhose and then I duct taped that to my chest.
Oh. That sounds uncomfortable.
Because I didn't have honey love when I was in college.
No. Well, we are here to say no more being uncomfortable. With Honey Love's bras, you will wonder why it took so long to make something so comfortable and so supportive. There's no underwire, but through some kind of wonderful magic, they managed to not sacrifice lift, all while making it in a fabric that's so comfortable, you barely know it's there, especially the crossover bra. I wear one of these almost every day. I'm wearing one right now because it's so comfortable and it easily fits into my life. But if you like a breathable and versatile legging, Honeylove has you covered on that front too. Plus, they have tanks, shapewear, and their V-bra that has molded cups, still without the underwire, to keep you from getting that dreaded uniboob effect other more relaxed bras tend to give you. So treat yourself to the best bras and shapewear on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com/forever. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off, honeylove.com/forever. After your purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them, and please support our show and tell them we send you. Treat yourself to Honeylove because you deserve it.
You know, one thing I think is really kind of interesting about skin, my skin, but all skin, is that like what it needs now in my 40s is not what I needed in my 30s.
Totally.
Definitely not what I needed in my 20s. But like, how are you supposed to know what your skin needs?
It's hard. It's hard to know.
Especially when there's just like so many products out there. The overwhelm is real. It's a struggle to even know how to get the results you want, what products to start with. This is why we're super excited to partner with Apostrophe. Apostrophe is a prescription skincare company that offers science-backed medications that are clinically proven to help. I have used Apostrophe. I love it. They will pair you with a board-certified dermatologist who literally creates a personalized treatment plan for your skin. I have done this a few times now. It is so easy to do their online consultation. You upload photos. And like within a few weeks, I had done the consultation and received my treatment plan and my product.
Amazing.
And that is how I became a tretinoin gal. I love the tretinoin that they sent me. I love their sunscreen. Both products have been amazing on my skin. And you, Forever 35 listeners, can get a special deal from Apostrophe. You can get your first visit for only $5. That's at apostrophe.com/forever35 when you use our code forever35. Now, that is a savings of $15. I like that. This code is only available to Forever 35 listeners. So to get started, just go to apostrophe.com/forever35 and click get started. And then use our code forever35 at sign up and you will get your first visit for only $5. Thank you, Apostrophe, for sponsoring this episode.
So we wanted to talk about organization.
We actually received a couple listener emails or voicemails asking us to talk about the systems we use to stay organized. And my response was, LOL, what systems? I'm as disorganized as all out. All out?
I mean, I don't know. You are and you aren't.
Yes, that has been the curse of my life. Anyway, but we'll talk about that in this conversation. But I do think we each do have various tools we use.
Yes, we do.
To try to stay organized.
Yes. I'm just thinking, like, I'm usually pretty on top of things. And then we had a call this morning that I had completely forgotten about. And Kate referred to it. And I was like, what are you talking about?
I got a panic, but you were an email that was like, what call? And then a text that was like, I'm confused. Normally, I'm the one who's confused.
And it was on our calendar, which was the weird thing.
It was.
And I even looked on our calendar.
But sometimes you just get the mental block where you're weird.
I thought, it's ironic that we're talking about organization today.
Well, can I actually start by telling you one thing I have set up?
Please.
So I now have so we both use Google Calendar individually. Mm-hmm. We also use it as a team.
Yeah.
So we are, we have a shared Forever 35 Google Calendar. I also have access to my husband's Google Calendar and he has mine. So we can always be on top of stuff.
And then you and I both when each other is busy.
Yes. We don't see what we're doing.
Right.
But in my calendar, Dory is in yellow.
You're in orange.
Oh, that's nice. Mm. So it is nice to keep track of people that way. But what I've started doing is I have Google Calendar send me every morning my schedule and an email.
Yeah.
And I look at it. And what I've had to do is I save all the Forever 35 appointments also in my personal Google Calendar. So that's all comes through. So that way every morning, you know, when I'm awake and checking my phone, I open that email just to remind myself what's going on each day.
I theoretically have that set up and I never look at it.
Dory, might I suggest?
Maybe I should just look at it. It's like my agenda.
It is. It's actually very nice. You get a syllabus every day.
Yeah.
So that is one thing that I use Google Calendar for, in addition to just managing my schedule.
Yep.
Which still feels like if I don't put something in Google Calendar, it is gone from my brain.
Oh, same.
It's really bad.
And I have to put it in like immediately.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I've definitely have missed stuff if I think I'm remembering it and then I forget at the last minute.
I do not find that Google Calendar is so great about general reminders, though.
No, I don't either, which is a challenge. I wish it was
better. It is. Yeah.
What do you use for general reminders? Do you set little alarms for yourself?
It depends what it is. If it's something like sometimes I'll put like an all day thing that's like a reminder of something, or if like something is due on that day. Mm-hmm. But just like general tasks of what I have to do throughout the day, I don't use Google Calendar for that.
Do you? One thing I also have started doing in Google Calendar is setting like alerts so that I know when something is coming up. Do you do that? Because I also forget.
I have half an hour before and 10 minutes before.
I think I have one day, 1 hour and 5 minutes. That's how kind of forgetful I feel.
Yeah.
Boy.
And those have saved me a couple times. Like, totally. Even though I have stuff on my calendar, I'll just get in the zone of doing something else. And then the little notification will pop up and I'm like, oh my gosh, yes, I do have that thing.
Definitely.
In half an hour.
So I think we...
People, oh, another thing that I do on Google Calendar, mm-hmm. sorry, just to add this, I add the classes that I'm doing on ClassPass or at my gym or anywhere else that I book classes from. I immediately add them to my personal calendar.
Oh, I have a standing Saturday 8 a.m. Pilates in my calendar, even when I don't go to the class mm-hmm. or make it in, it's just in there. And that's more so like when my husband goes to look at something,
yes.
it's like, hey, I'm already booked.
Right.
Dude.
Right. And so there are a couple classes that I do try to go to every week, one of which is this prenatal yoga class on Tuesday mornings.
Very nice.
And I just added that as a weekly thing to the calendar. So I think in large part, so you and I would know.
Yeah, that's your time.
That's my time. Don't book anything in this time. And same for me, like don't book anything in this time because otherwise I would just forget.
I also, I have found that putting something into my calendar makes me stick to it. I should try this. I am kind of trying to start writing first thing in the morning very early. I haven't moved this into a calendar zone, but I will put an exercise class in even if I'm not signed up for, like, this is my time to go for a walk or like my time to read, whatever it is. I try to schedule it so that it becomes a habit for me.
I mean, the planner that best self planner that I bought, that was too overwhelming
for
me.
Did that fall by the wayside for you?
Yeah, it was just like too much. I see how it could be very useful if I were just sort of in a slightly different frame of mind.
Okay.
But it was like a little too intense for what I wanted to do. But one of their whole things is that, and this was one of the things that was too intense for me, that might not be too intense for someone else. They basically want you to schedule like every half hour of your day.
Yes. And I couldn't figure it out. It was too much.
Yeah. And it's like, in theory, yes. But in practice, that emphasis on productivity gets me depressed. Feels very capitalist.
Ooh. Well, it also, I find if I don't stick to it, would start getting into like the shame spiral in my head.
Yeah.
And
so
that wasn't
it was
helpful.
Just like too much to try to like plan every minute of my day from the time I wake up to the time I go to bed.
Well, this is the first year I haven't bought myself some sort of like paper planner because I buy them. I bought two last year and they ultimately were not helpful for me.
I hear you.
So I think I'm 2019, my resolution, no paper planners.
Wait, but how is Wunderlist going for you?
Wunderlist is an app that I use on my phone and my computer, and it syncs. And it's a list, essentially, it's a list making app. And so I use it for to-dos. I would say it's going okay. I need to have a list of things I have to do somewhere.
Yeah.
And I've tried Google Tasks and that didn't really work for me. I've tried handwriting it. That I kind of just lose it, or I need it all. I'm so digitally wired now. Mm-hmm. I need it on a device, especially because, you know, I work from home, but I'm often commuting all over the city or I'm like at my kid's gymnastics class. Like I need to be able to always have access to this kind of stuff at all time. So Wonderlist so far has been the best solution. It is not perfect. Mm. There are things about it that don't work for me. You can't color code, which is very helpful for me visually. I don't know, Dory. I have a hard time dividing my to-do list. Like, for example, I have immediate to-dos, Forever 35, Forever 35 guests. But I feel like if I don't have it all in one one list, I'm not clicking around. So I don't know if someone has a better to-do list solution. I would love to hear it. Or another app. I've tried a bunch of apps too, and this is kind of the one that has worked with my brain. Because I really think that's it with these. There are 8 million productivity apps.
Yes.
It's finding the one that works with how you are wired.
Yeah. And I think when we were trying to figure out something that would work for both of us in terms of organization for the podcast, we tried a couple of things and we landed on Trello because that was the one that kind of seemed to work for both of us, the way that we operate.
And I actually really like Trello. We've stuck it. It's been pretty, again, there are things we change.
But I think for like what we needed it for, Trello is the best.
It's great.
But I don't use any type of app like that for my personal organization.
So where does all that live for you? Because the thought of it not living somewhere immediately gives me heart palpitations.
So some of it lives in Google Calendar. And then I also, the thing that I found to actually be the most effective for me is keeping a notepad by my bed. And every night I kind of do a brain dump of the stuff I need to do the next day.
Okay.
Again, not a perfect scenario because I also don't take the list with me. I look at it when I get up. I'm like, oh, right, I have to do that. And then at the end of the day, I cross it out. So I'm sort of I'm like writing it down and then relying on the fact that I wrote it down to remember.
Kind of puts it into your brain.
Kind of puts it into my brain. And that has actually been good. Like that's amazing. Has been working for me. And again, I've tried. I want to be a person who has a pretty bullet journal.
Me too.
It just has never worked. And same with paper planners. And so thus far, having just a paper to-do list is the thing that helps me, especially with like tasks. Like, oh, I need to go to the bank tomorrow. I need to mail that thing. I need like those kinds of things are the things I write down. But then I will also write down like, oh, I never emailed that person back. Now, email is another thing that is like,
you're really good at it.
Really?
I find you respond and reply, and often I'll get a reply from you. I'm like, oh shit, I haven't replied to that email yet.
Well, my email strategy is mostly reply immediately.
Yeah.
Because if I don't, it ends up getting lost.
The same.
I will sometimes star things and then go back and look at the stars and make sure that I replied to things. If it's something that like requires a longer reply that I don't have time to reply to, sometimes I will do that. I mostly try to respond right away.
My husband is like an amazing inbox zero person.
Oh, I am not.
He files everything and then anything he needs to respond to stays in his inbox. And he also sends himself like to-do emails and that's how he remembers what to do.
Oh, wow.
So his email inbox is kind of like part to-do list, part like emails that need replying. And then he just files everything. So he only has like 3 emails at a time. And it's like truly, I mean, this is just his brain.
Right.
Whereas me, I'll just keep bulk archiving stuff to pretend I'm at inbox zero and then it builds up to 1,000 emails.
Oh, I have so many emails in my inbox.
It's awful. And I haven't found a good folder system. I just can't. I want it so badly.
I actually wish Gmail had folders.
Me too.
Like, I know that that was some decision that they made a long time ago that they were just going to use these labels, but I would prefer that they have folders.
Yes.
Like, that you could just, I don't know.
Mr. and Mrs. Google, are you listening? Fix it.
And I know that you can set up a filter so stuff gets labeled and then it skips the inbox, but it's like if something's already in the inbox and you want it. Anyway, you get it.
I get it. Just want it to be easy. You want the free email that you use.
Exactly.
To be easy.
But, you know, you brought up your husband. Mm-hmm. And it's been interesting for me being married to someone who is not, like, my husband has ADHD and has trouble with kind of executive functioning type stuff.
Yeah.
And so it's sometimes been frustrating for me as someone who doesn't have those issues to kind of figure out how to like, how we can kind of be on the same page. We have like a dry erase calendar in our kitchen that I update every month, and that he tries to add stuff to. I put like the stuff we have to do together. Then I also add that stuff to my Google Calendar and add him to those invites.
Does he use a Google Calendar?
No, he uses iCal. But you can invite someone from iCal to an event and it shows up.
We also have dry erase boards. I thought this would be a great way to like keep everybody on the same page.
Yeah.
And instead it kind of started to feel like, oh, another thing I have to do. I have a monthly and a weekly.
We stopped using our weekly.
Oh, it was like, God, really? Again? We know we have gymnastics on Tuesday.
Yeah.
But I will say my 8-year-old child loves filling them out.
I've noticed
yeah,
this.
Yeah, you've seen it in my
it's
house.
It's very cute.
So I let that be her responsibility.
Oh, smart.
Because she actually does she puts all the things that like our family has to do.
Yeah.
She's not putting like my work meetings, but
sure.
You know, she's putting ballet. She's putting,
she
you
put
know.
Santa was coming.
I know. She loves putting really like sweet. Holiday content. So I have handed that off to my child who asks to do it and like decorates, and it's become a thing. It's a thing she likes to do. I wouldn't make her do it if she didn't like it. But yeah, I realized very quickly, like I've just loaded myself down with more labor.
Right.
And the whole point, I feel like, of trying to figure out our organizational systems is to remove the unnecessary like added layers of.
Yes.
Mental labor. Oh, yoy, yoy.
What about organization, like in your home?
Well, as we've talked about on this podcast, that is a challenge. That's been a challenge for me my whole life. Organization, mess, knowing where things are, all that stuff. And a few things I have found. One, I also dealt with a horrible kitchen moth infestation.
Oh, yes.
So one of the things that has actually really helped is moving all my food storage into like nice airtight containers. Because I did have a lot of containers I bought at like the dollar store.
Yes.
And it turns out, unfortunately, those do not work.
Right.
Especially when you have bugs trying to eat your grains. So I invested in click clack kitchen storage. Click clack.
Click clack.
I researched, I looked at OXO. It turns out the click clack got a little bit of better reviews from what I read. So I spent a pretty penny on a ton of these containers.
But it helped.
It helped. My kitchen moth situation is under control.
Yay.
If you've had kitchen moths.
I had kitchen moths in my old apartment and it was very annoying. And then I also had them in my closet and they ate through a lot of my wool stuff.
Well, and those kinds of moths are different.
I had both.
Yeah, I've had both too. They still appear in my closet occasionally, but the kitchen ones I have gotten under control. And I really do think it is part of this system. The other thing I have learned, like my whole closet is now binned. I have a lot of like shoe storage containers that I bought at IKEA and then clear plastic bins and also shelf dividers, all of which I have purchased at the container store. Now, I want to say this. I hate spending money at the container store because it feels you're just like all of a sudden hundreds of dollars have slipped out of your fingers. But I will say it has been a fantastic investment in that the things I have purchased are durable. They actually do keep me organized and they last. And I'm saying this as someone who loves the frickin' Dollar Tree and bought a ton of bins at the Dollar Tree only to have them essentially deteriorate on me in months.
I hear you.
The frustrating part of all of this is the financial investment has paid off. Because otherwise I would be buying, you know, we all know I'm a fan of IKEA.
Yeah, sure.
Even bins I bought at Costco. This feels sacrilegious to say. I bought bins for our playroom at Costco. They did not hold up.
Oh.
Now, obviously, Costco didn't make them. But
they sold them.
But I was disappointed. So okay. I have had the best luck at Container Store in terms of like closet organization. Oh, I'm jumping all over the place. My linen closet is IKEA.
Yes, I remember that.
Yes, that's been great. But my clothing closet, drawers, and kitchen stuff, I've all gotten a Container Store and bathroom. How about you? You also have gone the bin route.
I like a bin.
Where did you do your bin purchasing? Just ye olde Target?
I think most of our bins came from Target, yes. But I have been on the drawer organizer train for a long time.
Yeah, I still am trying to figure that out.
I love drawer organizers.
Like a drawer divider?
Yes.
Yes.
And they stretch. Mm-hmm. So they stretch to the size of your drawer. It helps keep my t-shirts organized.
It's helpful.
It's the best. My bras, my underwear, like... I love drawer organizers. If you're not using drawer organizers, get with the program. That's all I'm saying.
You heard it here first.
But you know, my husband and I are both kind of naturally cluttered people.
Same with me and my husband.
And it's just a constant struggle. Like every surface, every table becomes a repository for papers, mail, crap.
Mm-hmm.
Just things. And I know that the way to deal with this stuff, similar to my email strategy where I respond immediately, the way to deal with this is to put everything away immediately. And I just don't. And I think part of it is I don't have a place for everything.
Same.
And so recently when we've been really trying to clean up the house, like the dining room table is just covered in stuff. And my quote unquote solution for the stuff that didn't get thrown out, I was like, oh, okay, I'll just put this in my office in a pile on my desk.
Right. Your pile just finds a new home.
Yes. Yeah. The pile just migrated. So I would really like to get better at this.
I would too. But one thing I have been thinking about is kind of like the Marie Kondo Netflix show Takes the World by Storm,
mm-hmm.
following the book Taking the World by Storm.
Yes.
There is I do really firmly believe that like clutter does contribute to your own emotional stress.
Yes.
But there is also a part of me of like, this is now added work that we are somehow feeling like we have to mm-hmm. do. This kind of like home purge, and does it bring us like... You know, I thought about it. You know, I was like, I should empty out my closet and, you know, purge everything. But then there was another part of me was like, I don't have the time to do that right now. Like, yeah. I don't need this added pressure that I'm somehow putting on myself of like, I've also got to be, in addition to all the pressures we put on ourselves, I've also got to be like the most organized, minimalistic
totally.
Person.
Totally. And I hear that. But I do find that all the clutter and all the disorganization does stress me out more.
I'm with you. It is a practice.
It is a practice. It is a process. It is a journey.
It is a journey, friends.
Come along with us. We're going to take a break.
Our guest today is Elizabeth Holmes. Elizabeth, welcome to Forever 35.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're very excited to hear your many thoughts today on the podcast. I'm going to make that reference 100 times.
I will too.
But before we get started, I would love to read a lovely bio for you. Elizabeth Holmes is a veteran multimedia reporter with experience in print, online, radio, and television journalism. She began her journalism career as an on-air correspondent for a television station in Michigan's Upper Peninsula, and later became a general assignment reporter at a suburban Chicago newspaper. She spent more than a decade on staff at the Wall Street Journal, most recently as a senior style reporter and columnist focusing on fashion, beauty, and lifestyle trends. Since leaving that position in 2017, her work has appeared in a host of national outlets such as the New York Times, InStyle, Town and Country, and Vogue International. She is also the creator of the popular Instagram Stories series, So Many Thoughts, which offers tutorial commentary on the royal family. She was born and raised in the Midwest, made a home on the East Coast, and is now giving the West Coast a chance. So she is conveniently in our time zone.
We love that.
We love that.
That's me. Wow.
So we're so glad to have you on the podcast. We both follow you actively on Instagram.
Indeed.
And you have become known as, I would say, a royal expert.
Well, I call myself a royal enthusiast. And I will say that this whole So Many Thoughts business started... as a way to entertain myself more than anything. And it's really taken on a life of its own. So yes, at this point, I would say I have become somewhat of an expert on at least Meghan and Kate.
For our listeners who might not be familiar with your Instagram, can you just briefly describe what So Many Thoughts is?
Sure, absolutely. So I, every time Megan or Kate makes an appearance on Instagram stories, I take a picture of what they're wearing and I annotate it. And hopefully, it's not just, you know, whether I like an outfit or not, but to provide a little bit of context into what they're wearing, why they might be wearing it, whether it fits or not, whether it's appropriate for the occasion. So it's just a fun, entertaining, and hopefully informative Instagram story series that that I do.
And we should clarify for listeners who might not be royally obsessed, we are talking about Meghan Markle and Kate Middleton. Are they both duchesses?
They are.
Okay.
They are indeed. They are not princesses, which everybody wants to call them such, but they are technically duchesses.
Now, how did your personal fascination with the royal family and also royal fashion start? I mean, I know it's your background, but was it always kind of a passion for you?
I got married in 2011, which is when Kate and William got married. And I would say that was when my interest in the royal family started. I wasn't somebody who sort of followed along. I do remember where I was when Princess Diana died, but I had never been sort of a close follower of the royal families until their wedding, because I was planning my wedding and their wedding was, you know, obviously a spectacular, romantic, watch around the world event. And I sort of kept tabs on Kate and what she was up to. And then the birth of Prince George, obviously, and Princess Charlotte. And then it was, I mean, it was such a flip. I was home for the winter holidays last year, and I happened to be breastfeeding my second son. And nursing moms know you spend a tremendous amount of time staring at your phone. Mm-hmm. You spend a tremendous amount of time nursing. And Kate and William's holiday card popped up on my Instagram feed, and I just thought to myself, I have so many thoughts about this. Like I saw the picture and I was like, okay, let me try and do this. And I've long admired people who can do creative ways of storytelling, especially on social media. I feel like, these are vehicles for us as journalists to try different things, new things. And so I did this 3-slide progression where the first was just the picture of the card and the second was annotated with my thoughts. And then the third is sort of a mostly takeaway. And I've never gotten a response like I got to that picture and that sort of series. And shortly after that, Meghan and Harry released their official engagement photos. And I don't know if you remember those.
I'm seeing it in my head right now.
So spoon-worthy, right? And people were like, do you have thoughts about this? And I was like, oh, of course I do. And then it just sort of took off. I mean, the royals are really busy. They're out there trying to maintain the relevancy of this very, very old-fashioned institution. And Meghan and Kate are sort of breathing a new life into it. And unlike a celebrity where they have, you know, most celebrities have jobs, right? They're an actor or a musician. The only problem of the royals is to like make an appearance on behalf of a cause. And what I say to people who argue, you know, why do you care so much about what they're wearing? A lot of times, you know, I mean, most of us will never encounter a royal in person in our lives. You know, that's just not in the cards for most people. But the pictures of them are blasted around the world, you know, the minute they step out of the car. And so what we see first is their clothing. And their clothing is meant to send a message. These women choose their designers very carefully. They choose their whole ensemble, you know, down to their shoes and their jewelry is meant to send a message. So I think it's very worthy of dissection.
This is my like bias coming into it as a person who has written about my mom passing away, but I'm fascinated about when Kate and Meghan like send a nod to Diana's style. And I think that just happened with Meghan recently. She mixed like red and purple. And then I saw, you know, pictures of Diana and she mixed those colors. And I'm wondering, are all those, in your professional opinion, conscious choices?
Oh, very much so. I mean, on tour, when Meghan was touring Australia late last year, she wore Diana's butterfly earrings. And, you know, that sort of choice, as someone also who has lost her mom, I think about those messages you can send and what a moment that is for Harry, right? To be able to share something like that of his mother, you know, with his new bride who never had the chance to meet her. I think it's incredibly meaningful.
Me too. I have chills.
You also do a great job of showing how the royals dress for the slideshow.
Oh, yes.
I think we people don't understand that there's like a real art to styling, and any Hollywood stylist you talk to will, you know, it will sort of walk you through the progression of, you know, whether it's a costume designer on a show and they're developing a character, or, you know, you're taking an actress throughout the red carpets of award season. You know, they're working very hard to send a message, to build a brand, to develop a theme. And the women that work with the royals are doing that same thing. And I would argue that Meghan, in her past as an actress on a long-running television show, she knows this better than anyone. She knows the power of this. And so her choices are star building. And, you know, you saw right out of the gate when she officially became a royal, she wore like a series of blush dresses. And a lot of the rest of the world was like, how long can this continue? She just was sort of wearing iterations on a theme. It was all like a blush dress. And then she sort of expanded out, but she kept the boat neck. And so she wore a boat neck Dior, a navy Dior, and then she wore a boat neck, beautiful marigold Brandon Maxwell shift dress. And so she's sort of crafting her royal image very carefully. And there's a lot of kind of obvious themes in the way that she dresses. I would say, Kate, you mentioned the red and purple, that, you know, the moments where she sort of departs from that, from her usual, like the red and purple we saw her in, they just stand out immediately because you're like, oh gosh, you sort of sit up and pay notice. And they know that too. You know, I mean, this is all part, nothing the royals do happens by accident.
Can I ask you, a question kind of specifically about the following the royals as a form of self-care? I know you've touched on fandom and the royals as self-care, and I'm curious kind of what do you think it is that draws people to kind of consume the existence of the royal family in a way that like offers some self-soothing?
Well, I have to thank you guys for that like aha moment, because I have always paid attention to the royals. And then I started doing SMT and people, you know, were coming to me and they're saying, oh my goodness, like, thank you for this. You know, it's such a respite from the news cycle. I need to sort of escape for a second. And I was like, we all do. And then you guys came out with this fandom as a form of self-care. And I was like, that's exactly what this is. It's allowing yourself to get really excited or really interested in something that just feels like an escape, that it feels like, I mean, we all are following the news out of Washington and it's unavoidable, but sometimes you just want to lose yourself in the glamour and the sort of pageantry of something else. And I think the royals do that spectacularly well. You know, I mean, they're not all that fashion forward, so they're never going to have a huge miss. You know, they're still very glamorous and put together. And so there's always enough there to kind of talk about. And I think people see them as just a respite. I know I do. And that's what I've heard from a lot of my followers.
And you're coming from this as a person who worked as a political campaign reporter too. So you've been in the thick of like day to day breaking news. Were they a break for you at all times, or how did you kind of come to them?
You know, I mean, I think that I covered the 2008 presidential campaign, which, you know, back then it was first Mitt Romney that I followed, and then John McCain and Sarah Palin. And everyone said, well, it's never going to get crazier than Sarah Palin, which is hilarious because looking back, that feels very quaint.
Yeah.
But even then, you know, I mean, when you're in it and in the thick of it, you're constantly looking for like little just moments where you can take a breather from it. And I think that mindset as a news reporter for so long was really important to me. You know, I mean, the idea to unplug or, you know, lose yourself in a book or a television show as a journalist, and especially when I was like on the breaking news beat, that was really important to me, to be able to kind of give my brain a break and just relax and enjoy something. And it's funny because I think what the royals have done with Meghan in particular, they've brought a whole new audience to the royal family. A lot of people I hear from say, you know, before Meghan hit the scene, I wasn't interested. You know, obviously Kate has a ton of fans out there and people who have followed her for a long time. Meghan is so relatable to so many people. I mean, obviously she was a television star before, you know, so she wasn't necessarily like one of us, but she's American, she's biracial, she's divorced. You know, I mean, she had a lot of things and a lot of touch points that a lot of people identified with. And so I think what she's done in her, by joining the royal family, is she's brought a whole new crowd to follow along with everything. And I've really enjoyed that.
What are some other forms of self-care that you practice besides your royals fandom?
Oh my goodness. I mean, I like sleep. I have an 18-month-old and a 3.5-year-old, and I enjoy, you know, the weekend nap, because I also take a weekend nap. I feel like sleeping is one of my favorite things to do. I'm trying, you guys talk a lot about, you know, like a better bedtime routine, and that's something I really aspire to. Never been one who's been great at journaling. I have a hard time with the process of it. I don't know. I can't. I write, as a journalist, I write stuff that people are meant to read. And so something that's private for me, I kind of struggle with. But the idea of like reading a book before bed is something that I'm trying to do a little bit more of. And then skincare stuff, like a great face mask. Those 10 minutes go a really long way for me, because I feel like it just, I can close my bathroom door and be like, everybody can wait for 10 minutes while mom does this.
Do you have one, a go-to that you recommend?
Okay. So I lived in New York for forever, and now I move, I'm out here in the Bay Area, and I'm in like Target land, and I go to Target 3 times a week, but Target has like a whole wall of face masks, and they're all like $3. And I just feel like that's the best treat possible. The whole Yes To series. I don't know if you guys say like Yes To carrots, Yes To cucumbers. Those are so affordable, and they make all different kinds of ones for your eyes and, you know, for different skin problems. And so I always stock up on those. I feel like they're fantastic. And then I do, of course, like hoard a couple of prestige, Lancome ones for like the once a month real indulgent moment.
Elizabeth, you have written about doing IVF. Which,
yeah,
of course, I related to very much. And I was just wondering if you could talk about, I guess, if you want to talk about your story and InStyle that you wrote, or just kind of generally the IVF experience, and how that affected you personally and professionally, how it affected your marriage. I know, you know, for me and my husband, it's a big strain that it puts on a relationship. So I would love to just sort of hear more about your experience.
Of course. And I have to say, I'm so in awe of all that you have been able to share of your story in real time. I mean, I think that's so commendable. So many people, myself included, sort of choose this like weird suffer in silence through it all. And I kept thinking when we were doing it, I really want to talk about this. I really want to write about it, but I just can't. It was too scary. Unknowns were just too great. And I found the whole thing kind of suffocating. And so I followed you along. Congratulations.
No, thank you. Thank you.
So wonderful. I really share. I mean, it's just so inspiring. So my hat is off to you.
Oh, thank you.
Matt and I, you know, our story is a long one, but we got married, and we tried for a year and nothing was happening, and we went for a sort of initial workup, and it became pretty clear quite quickly that we had male factor infertility. So my husband has a chromosomal translocation that affects nothing but fertility. It comes from his family, and it was devastating. You know, I mean, I wrote an essay for InStyle about this last year, and my mom used to sort of threaten me with fertility. Whenever I had a boyfriend in high school, she was like, I just want you to know that your father and I got pregnant on the first try. It was sort of this like, you know, don't have sex or be careful. Kind of like undertone to it. And so I had always assumed, I mean, always, that when I wanted a baby, I would be able to have one.
Right.
And so it was never a question in my mind. And so to find out, you know, that we had this pretty serious problem, and, you know, we were lucky in our diagnosis, and then it jumped us straight to IVF. We didn't do IUI. We didn't, you know, I didn't do Coleman or anything like that. It was just, everybody's like, you got to go straight to IVF and you got to do it now. And it was a long road. My first round, I got pregnant and I miscarried pretty late in my first trimester, and that was devastating. We did two more rounds with retrievals and transfers, nothing, and just sort of lost hope. You know, spent so much money. Neither of our companies at the time offered much in the way of IVF coverage, and so we became like hermits. You know, I didn't ever want to go out to dinner because I wanted to save that money, you know. And then I had, before IVF, I had this sort of like horrible phobia of hospitals. And I actually kind of trace that back to when my mom was sick and when she died, because I just had such a horrible association that I just couldn't deal with any of it. So very lucky in that my husband did not have that. And he did all my shots for me, which was wonderful. And in some ways it brought us closer, but the fights that we had during that time, I look back and we were so broken, you know, and so scared and so uncertain of what our future looked like. And we did all kinds of things. We went to an adoption orientation class and looked into that. We had a meeting with a counselor about using a sperm donor, if it was going to come to that. We sort of tried to pursue many different avenues at the same time. And what ended up working for us was we just switched clinics in New York. You know, I mean, obviously there's a lot of places you can do IVF.
Yeah.
And we had done three rounds and three transfers at one clinic. And I said, you know, like, let's try someplace new. And our fourth round with this new doctor, it was like, it was a whole new experience. Mm-hmm. My body responded much better. And we ended up doing genetic testing, which for us was really important. Mm-hmm. And we had not done before. And we got two normal, I hate that word, but normal balanced embryos. And so my fourth transfer yielded our first son. He was born in June 2015. And then our fifth transfer is our second son, and he was born in July 2017. So, I mean, all in, we spent tens of thousands of dollars, and I jacked my body with so many hormones, and it was just really what a ride. I look back and I think I can't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
It was so heartbreaking at so many moments. And then, you know, I didn't really believe it until our first son Fitzgerald was born and I was holding baby. Like I could actually be in the room. And then we walked to the hospital and people were like, oh my God, I know you worked so hard for this. Like, it's so great to be a mom. And I was like, just so overwhelmed. I mean, I was just thinking like, I'm so thankful to be here and to have this baby. And I didn't ever think this would happen. And it was just totally surreal. But my heart goes out to anybody who has to deal with it. It's just awful. And somehow the combination of like not having my mom here, like not having a mom and trying to become a mom was just the hardest 3 years of my life.
Ugh. I was glad that you mentioned the isolation, because I think it's so hard when you're going through this to feel like anyone understands what you're going through. And then you also just, or at least I felt, I shouldn't say you, I felt like I didn't even want to put myself in social situations where I could suddenly be like triggered about something related to babies or kids. And I hated feeling that way.
I know. 'Cause you feel like an awful person because you're like, why do I hate babies and kids?
Yeah,
and I remember there was a moment at work where the two women that like the one that sat next to me and the one that sat behind me, both of them announced they were pregnant within like a couple weeks. Mm-hmm. And I lost my mind. I mean, I spent so much time crying in the bathroom because I was like, I'm just surrounded by two pregnant women and I'm supposed to be enjoying this for them. You know, I'm supposed, this is a happy thing for them and they're extremely excited. And, you know, I can't fake it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I had like one friend with two kids that I was able to like hold on to that joy, and everybody else, I just sort of, I had to let it fall. By the way, I just had to just put our friendships on pause for a little bit because I just, I couldn't deal. And then a lot of people have come to me since then and said, you know, I'm pregnant. And I want to tell my friend who's going through IVF, like, what do I do? And I always said the best way for anybody to tell anybody that they're pregnant is to text, because that gives the person on the other end a chance to process and to collect herself and then to come back with the joy that surely she wants to show you. I wanted to be excited for my friends who are pregnant, but there was no way I could do it in real time. And so by texting, it was a way for me to process and then collect myself and then, you know, send a couple emojis back and kind of fake my way through it. But I hate when people do it face to face or on the phone even, because it's like, you just never know what's going on someone else's life. And it's just, it's a hard thing.
I mean, I even preferred email.
Oh yeah. I mean, even that. Yes. Cause then that's, I mean, that's like even more one step.
Yeah, exactly.
Totally process.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'll see those three dots on your screen if somebody sets you back. Yeah. Oh, it's really, and I also think like you're full of so many hormones and you're actually feeling
this
stuff. And it's like you can't be expected to be your best self.
No.
Not at all. And I didn't tell a lot of people what we were going through. And by doing that, you don't get the sympathies, right? Because nobody knows, just like, what's wrong with you kind of thing. But my lesson there is you never know what people are up to and what they're trying to do. So just like, be kind.
Yeah. I mean, I was so surprised when I started talking about it publicly, how many people came out of the woodwork to tell me that they had also done IVF. And I had no idea. I mean, these weren't like close friends, but kind of, you know, people I was friendly with, who maybe I was Facebook friends with them and knew that they had kids, and just, you know, why would I have known that they did IVF? But suddenly all these people were reaching out to me, and it just kind of affirmed that idea of, you just don't know what people are going through. You never know.
No, and then people would like, you know, want to know why you needed to do IVF. And I'm like, that's also none of your business. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's just like, I would sometimes throw it out there as like a conversation stopper, you know, like people would say like, you know, are you trying to have kids? What's going on with kids? And I'd be like, we are, and it's taking us longer than we expected. And usually that would just shut people up.
Yeah.
And then when people would keep asking questions, it just drove me bonkers, because I was like, I don't really want to get into this with you. And this is also like none of your business.
So totally. And you get the feeling that they don't really care about you. It's more they're satisfying their curiosity about something that they don't really know that much about, which is not a great feeling.
I like, what does IVF entail?
Yeah.
You know, thankfully in New York, like you said, I mean, I knew so many people, not while we were doing it, but since we've done it. I mean, more women I know than I don't have had some sort of assisted reproduction.
Yeah.
And I was glad to always be sort of a sounding board and like a weird expert.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of my friends who then had to deal with it later. And it's a very common thing, but it's just talking about it is so hard. And Dori, what you and Matt have done, it's wonderful.
Oh, thank you so much.
What were some of your self-care practices in during those 3 years, especially because it sounds like you were also dealing with, you know, feelings of grief, trying to become a mom. You mentioned, well, not having your mom present. I'm curious, what did you do to take care of yourself and kind of get through?
Well, I ate a lot of ice cream.
Good move.
You know, but my acupuncturist was like, nothing cold. And I was like, okay, well, Ben and Jerry's.
They just
really
want
cold.
You to be like drinking bone broth by the gallon, I feel like.
Like always wearing socks. I'm like, good Lord. No, my husband would do my shots and then literally like escort me over to the armchair and then come to me with like a pint of Ben and Jerry's with a spoon in it. And like that, I mean, that meant the world to me. And I didn't eat the whole pint every night, but like just knowing that like I could sort of drown my sorrows in food. It was unhealthy, but it was sort of like whatever it takes. And everybody talks about the financial toll of IVF. It's so real. I mean, it's so real that I was so afraid to spend money to do things. But when we did decide to my husband had to go to Hawaii for a work thing, and I was like, I'm coming with you. Like, okay, your ticket is paid for, so like we'll just buy mine. And those moments, those indulgences felt really special because we didn't spend money do fun things, you know, in our normal life. And I think that, you know, before you have kids, before you know that there's going to be a light at the end of the tunnel, you think a lot about your relationship and what it will look like if it's just the two of you, you know, for the rest of time.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if your consent form, our consent forms always, we had to sign something and I knew that, you know, that showed we knew that the possibility of child-free living was ours, you know, I mean, that was sort of the default, and that's what they called it. You know, instead of like, you won't be able to have a baby, they called it child-free living. And so we talked a lot about child-free living and what we would do. And so there was some self-care in that hypothetical planning of what we would, what our lives would look like if we weren't able to become parents, and becoming sort of okay with that if that was our path. And what my therapist really helped me understand in that time is that families are made in all kinds of ways. Mm-hmm. And so if we wanted to be parents, we could be parents. It might not be how we expected.
Yeah.
And that's sort of a theme of my whole life. It's like expectations are a huge thing for me that I've had to learn to like let go and just know that I will have a full and joyful life. It might not be how I scripted it, and certainly it has not been, but it can be even better. And that was a real form of self-care, that therapy and those discussions, and it was really important and I think helped us through it.
That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
Because I do think, Dory, we talk about it now a lot, and you talk about it so much with Matt, but it still is a conversation that isn't had that much.
Yeah.
Well, and Dory too, I think, you know, you're at this, you're coming to this big moment and it's so exciting and so joyful. But I also was hit with postpartum depression after my first son, and people had an even harder time. Some of my friends, I feel like, didn't quite understand, because I was supposed to be so happy because I had worked so hard to have this baby.
Yeah.
And why wasn't I so happy? And you know, I'm a very type A person, and lack of sleep was really hard for me. And, you know, trying to understand this like screaming potato that I brought into the world, I was trying to wrap my arms around it. And and people were like, gosh, are you just obsessed with him? And I'm like, I'm trying here. And, you know, thankfully it was pretty mild for me, and it was pretty brief, but just know that like people mean very well, but this will be your own journey. You know, as you learn what kind of mom you want to be, you've got to sort of give yourself a space and tune out the well-meaning voices that are also out there, because then you have to sort of add some sort of gravity to the giving birth moment, I feel like.
Yeah. Well, Elizabeth, this has been so wonderful to get to talk to you. Can you tell our listeners where they can find you and follow you in the internet world?
Oh, of course. I'm on Instagram at eHolmes. And if you want to catch up on so many thoughts, all of my SMTs, as I call them shorthand, are archived on my profile page. And if you want to read my work, that my website is byelizabethholmes.com.
We will be there.
Yes. This is such a pleasure, Elizabeth.
Yeah, thank you so much. It shouldn't be so hard or expensive to find furniture that exudes elegance, sophistication, and a touch of luxury. And we're happy to say that today's sponsor, Article, makes getting quality furniture as easy as checking the pieces out online. Thanks to their online-only model, they have some really great manageable prices. Article believes in delightful design for every home, so you can get to creating a space that truly reflects your personal style. I now have a space that is quite outfitted in Article, and I have to tell you how not just like seamless, but truly enjoyable the ordering and shipping process was. It was extremely fast. It's affordable, very convenient, because I got to pick the delivery time, and they sent me updates every step of the way. It was like they knew that I was an obsessive checker on shipping, and they were like, we see you, we honor you, and we're going to support that journey for you. As Dory knows, I have a beautiful bench from Article right when you enter my home. I have some gorgeous planters. And then my favorite, my kind of like surprise favorite piece from Article are the blankets I have gotten for my sofa that my family all hogs.
Oh.
Including my dogs. My dogs love these blankets so they're like throws on our couch. The dogs try to monopolize them.
Dogs are such blanket hogs.
They know a soft blanket when they see one, I gotta say. So their endorsement, honestly, their endorsement says more than mine ever could. That's how soft these blankets are. Article has all kind of curated furniture from mid-century modern or coastal to industrial, Scandi, boho. So no matter what style you're leaning toward, they have got something for you. I mean, you could really do like every room in your house in a different kind of style if you wanted to. And with Article's team of designers, no matter what piece or how many, you're sure to find the perfect balance between style, quality, and price. Article is offering Forever 35 listeners $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more. To claim it, visit article.com/forever, and the discount will be automatically applied at checkout. That's article.com/forever for $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
So, how did picking up your clothes go?
It's going so well.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Really?
It's going a lot better, although I do have a little pile today that I didn't get through.
Okay.
I find like at night, I just want to throw my clothes on the floor. I don't want to be putting them away.
Yes.
So throw them on the floor and get in bed. So in the morning, I have to like consciously kind of tidy everything up, but it has gone well. Like for the first time in a while, I don't have like a mound of laundry that needs
That's
to be
amazing.
Put away in my bedroom.
Yeah. Yay.
I'm feeling pretty good about this one.
Good.
I'd like to keep it up. So, speaking of clutter.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a thing that really helps.
Well, and it's the thing where it's like, putting away your clothes in the morning takes 3 minutes.
Oh, it's the thing where you're like, you let it go for 3 weeks. And then when you do it, you're like, why didn't I just do this?
Yeah. So I hear you.
How is meal planning going? That was your intention last week.
It's actually going pretty well.
Look at us.
I know.
What?
I have been like thinking more about what I'm going to eat and planning ahead. And so I'm not like, oh no, I have nothing to eat for lunch. Guess I'll order takeout, which has been good. And I made a big vat of some stuff the other day that was like a rice bowl kind of thing. And I've been eating that. And I made something else for dinner last night that will be leftovers for dinner tonight. And it's been good to kind of get back in that rhythm of cooking and thinking about like what I'm going to eat. So yeah, it's been going well. And I've started writing it down on my to-do list, what I'm going to eat the next day.
Your nightly list.
My nightly list.
Oh, isn't that cool?
So it's like, oh, Wednesday lunch will be these leftovers. Dinner, I'm going to make XYZ. And then I can kind of think about like, do I need to go food shopping? Like, we live around the corner from a grocery store, so picking up a couple of things is not a big deal. I always think about like in Europe, they have like small stores that are, you know, you go to the butcher, you go to the produce store, like you go to all these little places and you go like almost every day. You go to the bakery, you get a fresh loaf of bread. It's not this mentality of like going to the grocery store once a week and buying a shit ton of stuff.
Yeah.
And I do try to do that, like just pop over to the grocery store and get a couple things that I need. I prefer that to the big trip where I end up buying stuff that I don't actually need.
Sure.
So that's been happening, but it's been going pretty well.
Well, that is a wonderful segue into my intention this week.
Hit me.
Which is to stick with the meal planning that I have now done consistently for 2 weeks.
Oh my goodness.
And I will share, I can share a Google Doc to show listeners how I do it. But speaking of organization, this kind of helps me stay on top of, it just gives me one less thing to be like stressing about every day.
Mm-hmm.
Remember how President Obama wore the same clothes every day so he didn't have to think about it?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what meal planning is to me. And I'm writing down kind of the ideas for breakfast. So like this week we're having like overnight oats and chicken sausage.
Mm-hmm.
So in the morning it's just there. I also make myself a vat, a weekly vat, mm-hmm. or a bi-weekly
mm-hmm.
vat.
Mm-hmm.
Currently it's spaghetti squash with a meat sauce that's sitting in your refrigerator.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have our dinners all planned out. And then I form a grocery list off of that. And I feel like it's kind of also reducing what I'm spending at the grocery store. So
that's awesome.
If I need to stick, it's feeling good. I got to see it through another week.
Yeah, great.
How about you?
So there's like a cabinet of doom.
This made me laugh. Cabinet of doom. I know those cabinets.
In our living room.
I have one.
That is filled with like old newspapers with my old clips.
Oh, gosh.
Boxes of photos that I never went through.
Mm-hmm.
Like just...
It's the cabinet of doom.
My dog's, my old dog's ashes. Like there's just like a bunch of random stuff in there. I need to go through it. Matt wants to get rid of the whole cabinet because we need to be like moving some stuff around. So I need to just like open it up and start going through it.
You need to face the doom.
I need to face the doom.
And I bet it will be like one of those things where you put it off and put it off. And then when you do it, it's faster and less painful than it feels like it's going to be.
I hope so.
I hope so.
Thank you.
Would you display your old dog's ashes?
Yeah, we like, you know, Matt used to work in a funeral home,
mm-hmm.
and he was like, why don't you have an urn for these? They've been in like a cardboard box.
I know. My mom had like our dog's dead dog's ashes in like a styrofoam McDonald's-esque container for decades.
Yeah. I just need to get like a nice urn to honor Lee's memory.
Yeah. My cat lives in our living room. I mean, are my dead cat's ashes.
Yeah, sure.
I should clarify. R.I.P. Cleo. All right. Well, let's tackle that closet of doom. If
cabinet.
You need a cheer... Cabinet.
Yes.
I'll come cheerlead.
Oh, thank you.
I'm going to hang out today.
All right.
Stand and watch you and make comments.
Well, keep that copy of the New York Observer.
Yeah, I'll be the worst influence. Those ashes don't need an urn. Put them back in the cabinet. Well, friends, we would love to hear how you stay organized stay organized. You can call us at 781-591-0390 or email us at forever35podcast@gmail.com.
You can join our Facebook group, facebook.com/group/forever35podcast. And the password is serums.
And if you like our show, please leave us a review on Ye Old Apple Podcasts and tell a friend. And if you really like us, mention us on social media.
And just a reminder that everything we mention is always on our website, forever35podcast.com. And you can follow us on Instagram at forever35podcast and on Twitter at forever35pod.
And Forever 35 is hosted and produced by Dori Shafrir and Kate Spencer and produced and edited by Sammy Junio. Lane Hammer is our assistant.
Bye.